Hi there, and welcome back to the Rob and the Regulator show on the 5th Radio. I'm here with the Watch Regulator.
We have Charles Sotanto from Jakarta joining us. How are you, Charles?
Very good, Rob. Nice to see you, Alex.
Nice to meet you. This is our first guest. This is the very first guest on our particular one.
Well, I wasn't going to tell Charles he was going to be the guinea pig first guest, but it's a good guy to have.
I know there was some sneaky stuff going on, right? So, you know, I took the bait, Alex, actually. You know, the way that he fished for me was actually quite interesting. So,
well, we can maybe use that technique with new people.
Well, we had to try and find something to get a few more people on. And, you know, we just got to basically, you know, we start with the best, so it can only go downhill from here, I guess. But we were looking for a guest. We've been just doing this just us for the last time, however many we've been doing. This is just a segment on Fifth Wrist Radio, and on the other segment that had a few guests on, a couple of guests. So we thought, oh, we might as well give it a stab as well, didn't we? Is that how it went, pretty much, right, Alex?
Yeah. I think I said we should probably have some guests. People are probably sick of us just talking crap for definitely, an hour plus, definitely. So let's get some of your wonderful connections and play and get some people on who can, you know, some other people who can talk about watching with us.
There's this guy who's a big bit the Rolex collector in Melbourne, actually. I don't know whether you know him. His name is Andrew Cormack.
Andrew McCormack.
Do you know him, Alex?
The name sounds familiar, but there's...
He's a big vintage Rolex collector. He's based in Melbourne. The car guy too. So it might be I'll hook you up with him.
Oh, excellent! Guy, you know. We've got another guest already.
There you go. Right, and it's close to home.
He's trying so hard to just get off the podcast already. He's like, I can bring someone else in right now. Yeah. He can take over from me.
Let's just before we start getting carried away, we do a quick what should we do first? A drink check. We've got a drink check. Are you drinking something, Charles, or have you come in dry?
Coffee.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, you're a coffee man.
It's too early for alcohol anyway.
Well, it is a little bit earlier, where you are. It's quite a bit early for me, but it's always beer o'clock somewhere, you know. So I mean, I've got a pretty boring beer. I'm on a Hahn Super Dry, which is my as I mentioned before, it's my go to. What are you drinking, Alex?
I've got,
you've got a pint of whiskey or something.
No, it's red wine. I think it's Cabernet Sauvignon. So I didn't want to have to go and top back up. So I just poured a larger one.
So you're already halfway through it. That started as a pint, I assume.
No, it was a little bit more, but it's not too much more.
And what are you wearing? Let's start with our guest. Charles, what do you got on your wrist? I saw a quick glimpse of it there, but... Oh, beautiful. Yes, the Grunkfeld.
Nice.
Yeah, I don't know. Fantastic. This is, that's as I've mentioned, it's one of my favorite indie brands, the Grunkfeld brothers, Tim and Bart, great guys, as you know. Yeah, okay. That's pretty, I think we've had a watch that high end on here, Alex.
Yeah.
For the moment, that trumps it, really.
We should wrap things now and finish it up.
We won't talk about ours.
Just have a very, we call it special relationship with the brothers, you know.
Yes.
I think, this was the first series. I actually got it when they previewed it before Basel. When was it? I think 2017, was it? When they first introduced this one?
Yeah, around that, yeah.
So yeah. I got a sneak preview.
It's Remontoir, right?
Yes, Remontoir. Yeah. This is the first production series. Number 11.
Beautiful.
So I got to choose the number.
Salmon Dial.
Salmon Dial.
And just for the listeners, I've known Charles for a few years, and pretty much I guess we met at one of the Indies events at Basel with the Grunkfelds or the Gonigals or someone, I don't know.
The Indie Dinner.
Yeah, probably one of the
Indie Dinner. Always the Indie Dinner, yeah. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. So that was, and this is the sort of guys we talk about and who were actually there. At least one or two of the Grunkfelds are usually there. And yeah, great guys. Brilliant brand. Well done. That's a nice, watch. It's probably one of my grails, I think. They're really one of my top end, all time favorite brands.
Yeah, but you know me. I mean, I started with the Indies, I think, way back in 2000 and, gotta be 2010, I think 2009. Yeah. So Right, yes. After Tempest, basically, I started collecting indies when nobody else actually gave a damn about them, right? I swear to God, that this is a story to tell, right? 2007, Tempest in Singapore. So I met John McGonagall the first time. I met Roger Smith the first time. And I met Kari. At that time, he was launching his Observatoire, and then Roger was just launched his Series 2. And then John, at that time, only had his the Tourbillon. You remember the Tourbillon that they have? Yep, the yeah, it was a hard choice. And then, believe it or not, and then this is, if Roger hears this, at that time, if I'm not mistaken, his Series 2 was selling only at 27,000 pounds.
Oh, wow. I hope you bought five of them.
Oh my God. You know, at that time, because, you know, that was my first foray to indies, right? I mean, I told the guys, I had dinner with each and every one of them. I had a budget for one watt. So I ordered I actually ordered the Observatoire, not the Roger Smith.
Yeah.
No regrets, but, you know, I think they're both equally awesome. But,
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, looking at the Series 2 price now, it's like sometimes
it's nuts. Well, before we move along, what about you, Alex? Alex, what are you wearing? Are you wearing something this time? You don't always.
Yeah, it's Tuesday. It is Tuesday, isn't it? I've lost track a bit of,
something like that.
Of the days and months and years. I've got my birth year Speedmaster on, but also because the last time we were talking about ultra slim movements, and we're talking about Piaget and all these kind of things. So I had that in my head, but because I'm not like a baller when it comes to budgets and stuff like that, I have a Swatch skin on. So it's all the all the thinness of a Piaget, but none of the cost.
Fair enough. Yeah, fair enough. That's good.
I just thought I'd try it out.
What about you, Rob?
I've got my Piccadilly, my Speak Marine Piccadilly.
I was actually going to wear that.
Yeah, I thought you might have. Yeah, I remember seeing you. I've seen yours at one point. I haven't worn it actually on the show, and I don't wear it that much. I just got it out. It's number two. I've got serial number two of this the 38 mil cream dial one. Yeah, it's nice. I like it. It's
might be very similar. Yours is this size or the next size? Is yours 41 or 38?
No. Mine is 38. Number three. With the brigade numerals,
brigade
numerals,
rose gold. Quite closely related. Rose gold case.
No, rose gold crown. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, another one.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Nice. Well, look, we've covered drinks and watches. We can just move right along. I don't know. I've just got questions like, you know, what's your favorite watch, all that stuff. But Alex, you probably have some questions if you want to ask Charles. I don't know. Where do we go from here?
Well, when you were talking about how you got into independence, what kind of stuff were you into before that? Because I always think it's interesting that transition what causes that change in thinking, because I assume, tell me what you were into before you got into independence, first of all, and then I'll make kind of wild accusations about why you made that jump.
Right. So, okay, so I have to go back to the first watch that I bought then. Yeah? I think the first, you want to call it serious watch that I bought with my own money was actually you guys remember this, a Jaeger LeCoultre Memo Fox compressor. This was, I think, year 2000. I recently returned from US. I think I got back from US 98. 2000, it was the first time I actually bought it. And then, you know, started my collection from there, you know, bought some of the mainstream brands for like here and there. Funny enough, never a Rolex. You always need a Rolex, but you know, never really get a focus, right? You know, I remember I used to have a Floor 2 white dial and then GP. But yeah, 2007, I guess it was a game changer, I mean, at least for me, right? Really looking at the difference in quality, the craftsmanship, and also I think the value proposition of a watch. Right. I think to see I remember that like 2007 in that Tempest session was the first time I actually saw the Batut.
Right.
I was like awestruck. Right. I mean, looking at that that thing, it was like, and then I think that year that was the year that actually presented the DB25 with a Starry Sky, and then the digital. I remember that clearly. Yeah. Like, with the old case, remember that? The, I was like, oh my God, right? But yeah, but I think to me, since then, I think the watches in my head, they're always classified into two, right? I think one is your tool watch, and the other one is really like the pinnacle of human ingenuity. I think I always tell this to my friends, right? I mean, to other collectors here in Indonesia, the younger ones. But just come to think about it again. I mean, watch, you have a multidiscipline, there is the product of a multidiscipline, you know, stuff, right? I mean, you got mathematics, absolutely, you got physics, you got metallurgy, you got art and design, you got, you know, and there's not much out there actually is combination of everything, right? I mean, you come to think about it again, you know, all these, whatever that's been invented in wristwatches was invented before the computer. The fact that they managed to actually do it, right? I mean, it's just crazy without computers, you know?
So, I'm taking notes here. Hang on, I'm taking notes. This is what we're going to use.
But was it not scary the first time when you have to, that moment where you have to take that leap and you've gone from, you said, like Rolex and GP and stuff, and like, was there anybody who was there kind of by your side who was guiding you, or did you have anybody either saying positive or negative things in your ear? Like, either you're totally mad for getting into this, or you're doing...
No, I mean, you know, the other guy who started at the same time with me collecting independent was this guy, Kevin Tan, out of Singapore. And then Rob knows him as well, right? You know, so... But then at that time, 2007, I didn't know anybody. I came to Tempest at my own will. Don't know any of the retailers, don't know nothing. So I bought all my watches in Indonesia. I heard about it, you know, bought a ticket, and then, you know, saw the lineup. I just madly go to anybody that, you know, who I can talk to, right?
This Tempest in Singapore or in the States?
Singapore.
In Singapore.
Yep. 2007, yeah.
Yeah.
It was an Hourglass event, right? So, I mean, this actually, come to think about it, there was nobody. But I came with an intent. I seriously came with an intent to actually learn, right? And boy, did I learn, right? And then talking to the you know, the Cardi of the world, the Roger Smith of the world, you kind of like open your eyes, right? I mean, the painstaking effort that they put into the creating each individual watches, right? And then I mean, maybe I was mad to answer you.
Well, a little bit mad, especially when it comes to collecting these things. But yeah,
nice. So you could say you've got more mad since that point. Then
it hasn't stopped. It hasn't stopped. It's always cyclical. I'm always reconfigurating my collection. But independent is always going to be my first love, so to speak. I mean, I love watches of all kinds, right? I mean, I respect what, you know, the big brands are doing. And then it doesn't mean that I don't have the big brands product. Independent is something that I always treasure.
Well, especially having
it's
that
be
first,
the core of my collection.
Having that first experience, I mean, that sounds like a crazy first experience to have with independence. It would be like going to a boxing match and it's Muhammad Ali versus Mike Tyson or something. So that must have been a real rush of excitement, and to have that access to the brands like that, I can totally understand why people would kind of fall head over heels from that point on and never look back, because it must be such an intoxicating experience.
It's gotta be, right? I mean, when you come to think about it again, I mean, I think when you go into that level, right, you want personalization, you want connection, right? Watch is a watch, doesn't matter what it is, but to be able to connect what the creator did to come up with a product and the effort, it's different, right? I mean, Rolex is Rolex. You take it as at face value, it is what it is, right? But independent watches, for me, I think the story for each of the product is there. And that's what you fall in love with, right? And you're not necessarily, you know, there's a special connection between you and the creator, you and the product, and then it's just there. I can, you know, for each and every watch that I own, especially for the independent, I still remember, you know, why I bought that in the first place.
Okay,
so, it's really being really personal. That's what that's fitting. That's the word that really wraps up for me. Being very personal experience.
Yeah. I was going to say, absolutely, for people who aren't into independence or who haven't explored that world yet, can you explain to people the kind of access and input you have into what eventually ends up on your wrist? And can you explain some? Because obviously you said you had other watches prior to getting to independence. Can you focus a bit on the difference between going in and buying a watch, say from a boutique, and having that boutique experience where they come and pour champagne down your throat, and the person might know a little bit about watches versus the actual independent route and the level of service and interaction you get with that.
Okay, I tell you a story that I think not a lot of people know, but John McGonagall knows. Where again, everything started 2007, right? And then at that time, you know, John was really pushing for you know, the studio.
It's a funny story already with McGonagall's involved. It's a funny story. Anyway,
right? Yeah, right. You know. And then, so I told him this, right? I mean, I consider myself as a simple guy. Most of my collection are time only watches anyway. I don't really into complications. The only complication that I like is firm. So I told him, like, you know, if you ever come out with a time only piece, then I would consider that. Right? Here's the story begin. Right? I think 2009 was the first time he actually called me back. I mean, we stay in contact after Tempest. I just say hi and chit chat, and then he called me up in 2009, said that, hey, you know, we're actually starting to create design the movement for our first time only watch. And then so he sent me a sketch. Actually, it was that I still kept the sketches that he sent me. It was a hand sketch, you know, saying that you know, this is gonna be the design, it's gonna look what we look like, you know, this is kind of like the idea. And then what do you think, right? So then, of course, with my limited knowledge about watches, what if it's this, it looks like this, what if it looks like that, and kind of like the criteria, you know, that I would want from a watch. You know, the process went on until 2011, was it? That was the first time he actually sent me the rendering of the what became the Tusker, basically. But at that time, the first subscription series, if you remember, it came out in a white gold with a clear sapphire,
yeah.
And you can see the movement through and through. So then, at that time, 2011 was the time actually I took the delivery of the Observatoire that I ordered in 2007. Right? Okay. So imagine, right? So then I told John, it's like it looks nice, but the looks is something that you know, I'm not really comfortable with, you know, this and that. If I can just change this and that, and I just took the Observatoire, I don't have money now, you know, all this kind of stuff, right? And then I think the subscription series sold out not long after that. And then 2012, he actually came back with the Vanu, the rendering of the Vanu, which is the red bull with the sapphire. Then I immediately put an order on that watch, right? And then of course, me being me, I didn't stop just ordering the standard one, because if you look at if you remember the Vanu, how it's shaped, right? You look at the beak. That holds the balance wheel. It's actually the standard finishing is actually straight gray, and also the chapter ring for the seconds is also straight gray, right? So I told John, it's like, yeah, I want to order one. I want number one, which he consented, but I want to make some changes. And then it's like, what would it be, right? Because we tried to actually change the shape of the sapphire. That was the first thing that I because it looks funny, right? It's not, it doesn't look, if you look at it at a glance, it doesn't look
cut out in it.
It doesn't look balanced, right?
So we
actually went back and forth with the concept design for a few times, but it just couldn't be done at that time, right? And this talking about months, right? You know, he came up with drawings after drawings after drawings, and then it took months. That's like, then he said, you know, we gave up, right? I mean, any other things we would do, but I don't think we can change the sapphire, right? So then I ended up asking him to actually finish the beak, the second chapter ring, and also the tip of the hand, frosted finish. So I finally took the delivery of the watch 2015. And then I remember I met Steven in Baselworld. Yeah. So, hey, Charles, you know, I was the one who actually did your watch. And then, believe it or not, if I have a choice, I don't want to do it ever again. You know why it took so long? You know how difficult it is to actually do the frosted finish on that small little thing? fucking crazy. Sorry. This is crazy, right? I don't want to do it again. So lo and behold, basically, my Banu is the only one that has a faster finish on those special parts. And
perfect.
Has a number one. And it That's took brilliant. Them, what, 2009 to 2015 until the realization from... paper to actually a product, finished product. So
see, that's what you can't get anywhere else. Yeah.
Yeah, that story really sums up, for me, at least, it really sums up the kind of relationship that you would have with the independent watchmaker. Mm-hmm. That you yep. will definitely will not have unless you're, you know, I don't know, even with Cloudsphere, for example, I don't know whether he has that with Patek. Yeah, I don't exactly. know. Right?
Yeah.
You know. But for normal, considering normal people like us,
yeah.
No
yeah,
way.
That's
or you could wait the same length of time and get a Daytona and then bump into someone else in the street that has the same Daytona.
Exactly.
Right?
So, that's an amazing story. Yeah. I guess that's the thing that gets that you don't realize is that access and personalized service that you get. It's there's nothing no,
but,
really.
But at the end of the day, Alex, is that watches? I think for at least for me now, it already transcends more. You know, it's not about watches anymore, but it's all about people, about the relationship. You know, I gain a lot of friends through it. And then, you know, the for example, the independent dinner that we always have in Basel every time we're there, you know.
Mm. That's kind of a highlight for a lot of people. That's what I've been talking about when people, you know, we're talking about cancellation of this and that and everything. Well, it's a pity, but the brands, you know, they don't really care, or people don't care about seeing big brands, or Basel's finished and it's not necessary. And all this. The only thing we go for really is these independents. And I remember when they used to be, you know, 8 years ago, they were way out in that back thing. They were a long way away. You know, they've been approaching more and more as other brands leave, and they're getting a more important place. And that's why they're in the Café Horloger in SIHH as well. And it's been because they're becoming more important. But they really have come along. In the last 10 years, they've come from something which has been sort of a fringe thing. And people realize that there's a...
Yeah, I remember. Yeah. I mean, the first time I went to the independent corners, the AHCI corner. Then, you know, SEI together with Stepan, Kari, Bronfeld brothers, they always stick together, right? And they always have a group together. And in Basel. You know, I remember back then, I was able to actually smoke inside of their booth.
I like the sound of this already.
You know, that's how you know how back there were. Nobody cares, right?
And no, I think it's just, no. it's quite, no, it's different, but I think people have been there a few times and with the independent, it totally changes your whole outlook on the thing. And it's a different show for us. You know, it's not the guys going to see the new Pateks and Rolex and whatever. It's that's sort of, for us, that's fringe. You know, we're hanging around, and this is what you're going to be, Alex, when I take you to Basel. With independent guys and
smoking,
the guys that are there.
Smoking up the back.
Exactly. Smoking cigars at the Grownfields and stuff. Yeah. So that's
you know you wouldn't believe it, right? Back then, 5 p.m. the thing closed. Everybody gonna flock in. You meet the usual suspect. Gary Getz. You name it. You know all those guys. They're just gonna flock into the independent booth. You know, gear start flowing nonstop, and everybody starts smoking. that's the kind of stuff that you miss. You know, I don't the whole show, right? You know, watches are watches, and after a while, you can't tell the difference anymore, right?
This independent dinner, is that the one you've talked about before, Rob? The super secret one that
probably one of them. Yeah. Oh, it's not super secret.
What's the one you said like don't nobody even ask? You don't get invited.
No, I'm not going to tell you.
Yeah, exactly. Is this the same one, or is this a different one?
Yeah. There's a couple, but yeah, that's the one. There was one in Geneva that a friend and I started. And then there's a couple in Basel, or there's the Schnitzel, and then there's a Thai, and then there's a few others, but the main ones are
Charles Schnitzel is Frank, right?
Yeah, Frank, exactly, from Monochrome. Yeah, so there's a few. And Andrew, and then we do other stuff.
The Thai dinner, we started it, I think, when was it, 2014?
Yeah, something like that, I guess. Yeah,
2014, I think,
yeah.
And we always occupied the basement. since it got larger and larger every year.
We might be able to find room for you next year, Alex. We'll find a little spot.
Just put me at a little kiddie table at the end. I'll be the kiddie, kiddie table smoking.
Alex, next year, if they do it again, just stick around close with me because they cannot order without me.
Okay,
I'm the guy who always orders for
exactly.
the guys anyway. So.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's all these little events and the one around SIH, when we did there as well, at Indy's Dinner and stuff, and that kind of in Geneva, and that got sort of got a bit out of control. we're gonna make it smaller again and get back to what it used to be, I think. You've got a few good collectors there in around in Singapore, Hong Kong, that region, and Indonesia. There's some big heavy hitters and some guys with some really nice stuff. And the collectors, the brands or the indie brands, they like it down there, and they get down there and they get good support. So obviously from
I think Singapore, I think within this region, Singapore and Hong Kong, I would say they're the most mature for independence.
Yes. Yeah.
I think most of the guys who've been collecting for more, like who started the same period as I was, right now it's going beyond the mainstream brands already.
Yes.
But I think Indonesia is just starting, I can put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I think people like the Gronefelds are already quite known. Kari is another different level.
Yeah.
But people are starting to notice the independent brands, right? Because the difference, right? And you want to be, to spend that much money, you want to be different.
Yeah.
You want to be individual. Right?
Yes. Yeah.
There's something that you will not get with the Patek of the world, even though you say you name it like 5970, you name it 5170P, right? There's gonna be less than 6 degrees of separation to another guy who owns one.
Yes,
matter. If Patek calls it rare, but the fact of the matter is that you want to always find somebody who wears it, right?
Yeah. And have you always bought new Charles? Have you bought auction pieces or anything much? Or
okay, so for independence, always buy new because I'm more interested about the process and the relationship rather than I'm interested in the product, but the journey is one thing that really interests me.
Mm-hmm.
And then but for the rest, because I collect vintage as well, not the Rolex type. But I like the old chronograph.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, those I buy either from auction or from dealers that I can trust.
Yes. Yeah.
So what kind of chronographs are we talking about, Charles?
I have Angelus. That time, 40s. The military chronograph.
Yeah.
The Heuer. I have a Steinzeit. I don't know whether you know
what
the Bundeswehr.
Oh yeah.
With the Steinzeit one, with
like a different military department or something?
Yes. One? So I think that one is for the intended for the guy who operates the cannon to actually calculate the trajectory of the projectile.
I've always really liked the Bund, actually.
Yeah. So that's the other part of my collection. I try to as much as I can because I think those are nice.
That's probably a bit more up our alley, Alex. It's kind of the accessible stuff, and I know you like your vintage. I mean, I like vintage too. I've got a few, but I mean, you're into the vintage and the chronograph, so you probably. Well,
I guess it's a lot more accessible, the vintage world. You can get into it on so many different levels. You can find something interesting for $100, or you can spend hundreds of thousands of dollars. The independent thing is a bit more a venture into the unknown, and it's been kind of very educational and informative listening to Charles. And I mean, I had no idea that the kind of process of getting a watch to your specifications could be that length of time, and it's obviously a huge investment from both sides for that relationship to work and to come out the other end with something that they're happy to give you, although the watchmaker obviously wasn't happy because he had to spend so much frosting the end of that hand. But it's a real journey to go through that. So if you were to, for people that aren't into independence as yet, if you've got like a couple of minutes to sing the praises of one particular brand and how well they do what they do, and let the watch passion flow out and let the people hear about one particular brand and why, when you look at their watches, you can't understand why they're not the most well-known brand in the world, because the level of work that they put into it is just next level.
I would say if I have to choose, right? I think the well-knowns are the well-knowns, right? Everybody knows who they are. Romain, Kari, Roger, you know, all those guys. Two guys I think deserve more recognition, right? For different objective altogether, right? If you talk about the design language and I talk about the uniqueness of a watch design, I always think Stepan Sapronova has the has a very interesting value proposition. I think year after year after year, he managed to actually sharpen his product on a central, a very central one theme only, which is the moon phase. His new moon lunation, I think it's just crazy stuff, right?
Yep.
But if you think about it again, I always told to the indie guys, right? I think the most important thing is about the consistency of the design language, because then, you know, at the end of the day, people will remember, you know, why people wear AP, why people wear Nautilus. You can see it from a mile away. You can see the design language from a mile away. You can recognize it, right? That's very important. So I think Stepan's watch now also managed to actually carry that consistency in design, but he adds his incredible value to it. You know, I don't like the price now that what he's offering right now, but I think it's justifiable. I think what he's done, right? With this new moon lunation. So that's one. The other one that I am actually keen for myself, never really got the chance to actually get it, is actually Aaron Bexay.
Is he in the IHCI thing?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yes. So if you look at his watches, I think there's talking about the design of the case is very unique. It's not square, but it's a bit of an oval towards the end, and then his finishing, the way that he's designed the bridges for his movement is very classical. The way they finish it all by hands is just crazy stuff that he's doing. Yeah, it's just another brand that I really want to know for that. I met Aaron I think 2012, I think in KL. That was the first time. Been monitoring his progress. The unfortunate thing about what I like right now is just whatever that I want to buy, I need to plan far, far ahead of it, right?
Sounds like
so, so now I'm working on a list right now, you know, so that, you know, I need to be disciplined on that so that I can get to the point where I want to be at the state of the collection, you know, say in another 10 years, this is what the collection is going to look like. So
that's quite
I'm
strategic.
Still working on it. You have to be, you know, if you consider right now, I spoke to Roger the other day, it's like, hey, I think I'm ready to actually commit to get one of your watches. Right? I told him, right? It's like, okay, so what's the deal going to be, right? So you deposit a certain amount of money to get in the queue. I was like, sorry? Like, yeah, to get in the queue, right? What do you mean, right? You got to pay the deposit. Then I will let you know when you're going to be in the queue. Then after that, you're going to wait another 3 to 5 years. I was like, okay. See, you then, you know, for that reason alone, you need to be strategic in the way that you want to, you know, if you want to have a new watch every year, you need to make a list, right?
So I thought they were like 10 years. Maybe that's just the word that goes around on the street. 3 to 5 years suddenly sounds pretty reasonable.
I don't know. So that's what he told me, you know, at this point in time. But let's see, right? But yeah, I think for my own objective right now, I really want to complete the independent collection. I've missed the Dufour simplicity.
That's what I was going to ask you next. Is there something like a Dufour or some Grail thing like a Dufour or a Gruber 4C or something? Do you have a GF Gruber 4C? No, you don't have a Gruber.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But it, what about a Dufour then? Is that possible, or you know, it'd be pre-owned, right?
It will have to be pre-owned. I actually asked him a few times. I actually asked him again during Basel.
Yeah.
He's very coy about it. That's one of the reasons why I invited him to the independent dinner. Remember that? He came along.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't know. I think it's a far-fetched idea for a decor at this point in time. But I really want to, I think the next is going to be the Roger Smith and also the Romain.
Romain Gauthier?
Romain Gauthier,
yeah. Yes. Yeah, I love those watches. They're beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah. That's done. I mean, it's done.
Yeah.
The independent is done. My homework
what
is
about,
done.
What about Raoul Page? Guys like him? Have you seen
I
Raoul?
I actually never seen his watch in real, right? In metal. I never got a chance to actually meet him. I don't think so. You know?
Yeah, okay. No, he doesn't have a... Didn't have a stand or anything, nothing official. He was wandering around. He was at Basel last time, I think.
Oh, but, same like ADC, right? Atelier de Chronometry, right? They never have a stand, right? They always roam around.
Yeah.
I got a chance to see them, you know?
No.
But wait a minute. So you're saying there's people who have stands, where this is for the uninitiated.
Yeah.
And then there's other people who just kind of wander around, but they just come up to you like, do you want to buy a watch? I've got some watches here.
No, trench coat. No. So usually you make an appointment with them before the Basel starts, right?
Oh, that sounds much more professional.
You know, they would just, you know, just they're staying in a hotel, you just make an appointment, you know, at a cafe somewhere, see the watch and so forth. Mm. You know, some of those guys really have interesting work, like Atelier de Chrono, but you know, those guys are crazy, right? Three people operation, you know?
Yeah. Have you heard of Peterman Beda?
Yes.
Peterman Beda, yeah.
Yes. Peter Chong thinks very highly of a
product. Peter Chong would be all over that, I guess. What they're doing is not bad. They're not cheap for a couple of young guys. They seem to be doing nice stuff though.
Yeah, same this with this Panbury. Is it Panbury? The Belgian guys.
Yep. Yeah. Now, there's so many of them out there. That's the thing. There's every year there's a new one there, and that's what's good about. Another good thing about Basel, you can go there and you can discover stuff, Alex. Yeah. You know, what I'm saying you can go there and there's people. You're bound to see a brand you've never heard of, even if you've been in the industry for a long time, and you all of a sudden you walk past HCI or one of these independent, and you'll see a brand you've probably seen them before, but you're too busy to look or whatever. And there's some really nice discoveries there.
I think the good thing about independent, it will push the boundaries of design, of thinking, of way to tell time, you know. That's what I love about them. They're not constrained with the specifics, right? I mean, if you're a Patek, you have to go the. If you're a Rolex, you have to it has to be an Oyster case, not an Oyster case. Then it's gonna be that case, you know.
You know
what I mean, right?
Yeah.
So
is there no fear for these independents with what's going on just now? Are they gonna be kind of immune from the economic downturn because of just the low numbers they produce and the high cost associated with it? Are there still going to be as many of these independents popping up?
I don't know. I think for my take is that for the established one, because of the backlog is so long, I think the impact is going to be quite minimum. But the aspiring one, maybe. I don't know. For example, like the Grunfelds right now, I think the last time I spoke to Tim and Bart, I think the lead time is about 18 months to get one. Yeah. I haven't talked to him since the situation where there are any drop-off or anything right now. But, you know, so far it hasn't changed. You look at that Hajime right now, is 5 years behind schedule. 5 years.
5 years. Beautiful stuff, though. My goodness.
5 years behind schedule. So...
I guess most of the big ones, all those guys, the established ones, as you say, they have an order book which is probably protecting them from any sort of downturn, short term.
Yeah.
But it is a bit of a worry though. And there's guys who won't have as big an order book, and the guys that are sort of a bit borderline, maybe who might not.
Yeah.
Well, they have to get back to doing something else. You know, they go and work for someone else. They do subcontracting. They do whatever. That's what they've always done anyway. But now they'll pull through. But I might put a few of them back a little bit, I think, in their aspiration.
Yeah, that's another beauty, right, about independent watches, right? I mean, even up until last year, I think Bart and Tim were still doing finishing for a very established brand.
Exactly. Yep.
Right. People don't know about it, you know. People who receive their mainstream brand, they don't know that these guys are the ones who actually finish their watches, you know, or design their watches or do the prototyping, you know. I mean, John does a lot of prototyping for a lot of big brands, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So these are, I think these people are the heart and soul of the watch industry. I mean, for me, at least, right?
I guess it's like, for me, it's like the cheaper brands, or, you know, I'm talking very cheap. I'm talking, you know, the Daniel Wellingtons and all those things, and even the smartwatches are getting people into watchmaking in general, and then people get into watchmaking, the young people get into watchmaking, then they start buying mechanical, and then they can buy their Tissots and their Longines and whatever and go work their way up. And eventually, you know, they move on after the mainstream brands or the big brands, even when they get their Pateks and Rolexes, and then they go on to, and then they discover all this hidden iceberg, which is, you know, the independence, which is, you know, a whole new ball game, next level, basically. So what
give us a role. One thing that I would say, right, and that's another thing to add for your listeners, that doing the independent, through, you know, going through the process, you tend to realize what you like and what you don't like. You have to be able to do that. If not, then the process is not going to be finished, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's a very, very positive thing to experience, you know?
Yeah, and you realize that the half of your collection you don't even like. I mean, well, you didn't know why, or you didn't know why you're collecting it, but yeah.
It pushes,
when you see something that's perfect for you.
It pushes your thinking, you know?
Yeah.
Why do I have to do this? Why do I have to do that? You know, all this kind of stuff. Then that's why now I can basically put a boxes into my collection, and this is, you know, stuff that I like and stuff I don't like. I know exactly why I like what I like.
Yeah. So what else? Just a quick roll call. You've also got Dubitun, yeah?
Yes.
What have I forgotten? You're a Kari, a few of them.
I have two Karis. I have a Uruvek.
No, the Uvek, is it the black Uvek?
Yes,
black
one with, the black Uruvek.
With orange.
Yeah, the 103. The last edition, yeah.
That's quite different. Then, I mean, from traditional watchmaking.
That's exactly the point, right?
Yeah.
You know, true. Why do you want to be the same, right?
I think
independent is always going to be my love, right?
And Stepan, have you got one of the Lunasian, one of the last moon ones, or did you order one, or have you, is that in the process, or possibly for Stepan?
Talking to him. There's some of the is talking to him right now. I mean, there's some things that I would change on the design for sure.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah.
Because I have the older K3,
Yeah.
If I order one, if I get around ordering one, I would make it have a similar tone of color.
Because
it was a blue.
The colors are beautiful on Stepan's watches. It's definitely
It's crazy stuff.
I just love how customizable all this stuff is. When I think about customers contacting us sometimes and saying, can we, my grandmother has poor eyesight, can we change the hands and the watch to a different color? We pretty much have to get something in the managing director's blood written to say that it's okay to change the hands on a $100 watch. Yeah. And then
I tell you another story. I sent my Sarapanepa for service, and then when Stepan received it, I said, hey, can we do something fun with the watch, right? And I asked him whether it's going to cost me anything. It's like, no, I'll do it for you for free. I just for the heck of it. So he actually changed the Super Luminova on the base plate into colors. So then when it's at night, you know the K3, what I'm talking about, right? So below the dial, there's a stars cutout dial, right?
Yep.
So all the stars gonna actually shine different colors.
Yeah, right.
So that's what he did. I'll send you a picture of it. It's like brilliant. Awesome, man.
I didn't get there. I bought one of his the SUF. I bought the, what is it called? Sure. The SUF, but the one with the Vetihenen or whatever it's called, or the one with the, I bought the Mo one. Green I had steel? To get one with the Mo bezel. I got the Mo bezel.
That's new then.
It's pretty, they've done another one, but it's kind of new and it's quite limited. It's quite a small, that's as close as I can get the Stepan stuff, because he's for the moment was a bit out of reach, the Stepaneva. So you know, it's a nice little watch to have though. It's got Carrie's dial. It's got Mo's bezel. It's a Stepan watch still. So you know, it's kind of for the poor people.
You better love the guy though. I mean, Stepan is a great guy.
That's Mo's bezel. Your tattooist friend.
Exactly.
Exactly. Everything's like falling into place now.
Isn't that the watch you call with pedestrian? Some basic watch that I did a review of. Anyway,
<That's> me.
But. But that's the good thing about these guys. You can have a beer with them, especially, you know, you're talking about Stepan, the McGonagalls and the Groenfields, for me in particular. They're good drinking beer. Well, they're not good to drink with because I drink under the table most of them. And it's scary. But they're just about having a good time. But they're not all straight-laced. And I think probably people like, there are not all watchmakers are like that. You know, and some are quite traditional. But these sort of guys, well, Carrier and Roger Smith, you know, he's a good guy, but he's very traditional, and they're a bit more straight laced, if I could say that. Whereas these guys are just—they're just party animals. They just want to have a laugh. I don't know how they do their watchmaking. They must be shaking so much some mornings when they get in there, and they're still pumping out beautiful pieces. It's amazing.
We've got that part of it nailed, Rob. We've got the party side of things. We just need to actually get some. We just need to actually make some watches. Mm. If we could combine those two things.
We're just going to get more people on this podcast. Yeah. But now we'll be away now. We've hit the ground running with Charles. Now we can just get. We're going to get Mo on here. We were talking about Mo. We may have him on here in a couple of days' time, Charles. He's keen to join us as well. So
lovely.
That'll be fun.
You know, what you should do. You should do next. It's like the next time you have it, you should have me, Andrew, and Mo together.
Exactly.
Then we're going to have a good laugh.
You need to bring something other than coffee next time, though.
Yeah. I mean, but you have to do it a bit later, though.
No, I'm working on it. I have thought about that. I did think about it. Yeah. It's in the pipeline.
You know, because even for me, Gavin, and Kevin, we all have distinct tastes, right?
Yes.
Same thing with Mo and Andrew.
Very funny. Good to get Gavin and Kevin. I know Kevin, but I don't know Gavin's quite so well. I met him, but I don't really know him. So, but anyway, we'll talk to him as well. This is all guys.
You let
this
me
is
know. I mean, let me know.
Yeah. I haven't seen Kevin for a while. He was not at the last Basel I was at, I don't think. And he's sort of hit and miss. Yeah. But I hope he's going well.
Doesn't have the time.
No. He's a busy guy.
Yesterday. Yeah. Busy guy.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Say hi next time you're talking to him. Yeah. Anyway, that's not.
I will.
If you've got this clear vision, you're talking about planning ahead so far, which obviously you need to do. Is there an end completion thing? Is it going to be as easy as that? No. That you just, that comes to an end and then that's it? Do you then fall back on your vintage stuff or?
No, I don't. I think it's watch collecting is always going to be a journey, right? One thing that I think the baseline is going to be constant because that's who you are. But I think the flavors can have a seasonal moments to it, if you want to put it that way, right? I think I don't know. I mean, in my head right now, for independence, there are the must have and there are the ones that you pay attention to and see how they're going to develop. But yeah, I think for me, I'm going to concentrate on the must-have first and then see how it goes for the rest, right? And it's never going to be a constant state. You know, I think for me personally, every 3 to 4 years, I'm going to look at my collection and then I'm just going to unload some, you know.
Let us know.
but funny enough, the independents always stay there. You know, that's the crazy thing. You know, so don't.
I think that's a good thing about not knowing where you're going. I remember being a slightly younger man, and my mom would always say, like, "What are your plans for life? Where are you going to be? What job are you going to have?" And I always thought, like, I don't really want to know where I'm going that much. Like, one minute I'm in Scotland, then I live in Brazil, now I'm in Australia. Like, it's not. It's nice to kind of have a general idea and what's happening and what's going on, but it's also nice to not know what's going to be going on and where you're going to be next year. And especially, like you say, with new brands coming along, that there's new people coming out all the time with exciting watches. So it could be next year someone comes along and they're the total love of your life and you can't see past them. Yeah. So
and there's little brands which are Ming, for example, or whatever, or brands, that aren't necessarily, they're quite good, they're quite cheap, not just them, but there's a whole, you know, bunch of them at Basel as well. You'll see brands that aren't expensive, Lundy Blue, these beautiful, beautiful watches coming out from brands that are not huge, and they don't have a big logistics set up in there, so they can charge a reasonable amount, which is accessible for a lot of people. It's amazing. It's there's so much stuff out there, but
things to learn. You will never stop learning. That's one thing about it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Wow. That's brilliant. That's why I think it was just, and I kept saying, I was sort of hoping that Basel wasn't going to be cancelled, or SIHH, when that was cancelled, I guess we knew Basel was going to be, but it wasn't just about the big brands. People were saying, oh, but what's the big deal? You know, you're sick of Basel anyway. I'm not, you don't get, you know, some journalists tend to pretend they're blasé about it, and I want to go to Basel, but the Basel thing is just about these meeting these guys and seeing what their latest thing is, and you know, catching up with them basically. In Jakarta, Charles, is there a big collector community, or do you go across to Singapore a lot, Hong Kong, or is it in Jakarta itself? There's a lot of people there. There must be some big collectors.
Yeah. I mean, I actually run a collector's community. Actually, one collector community in Jakarta. Yeah. Again, as I said, right, I think the maturity level, and maybe to a certain extent also the risk appetite is also very different than Singapore, right? I think it takes time to actually groom it. I think the general direction is already, I think this is going that way. And, and that's what I love about it. And that's why I've been, I mean, you look at Timeplace is a dominant retailer here in Indonesia. They didn't have any independent, but I think starting from last year, they took Armin Strong, they took Avestan 2-3 years ago. So I think it's starting, right? Because eventually the journey will always come to a point, on what is next for me, right? As a collector, right? You know, it doesn't matter where you start, right? But you're always going to come to that point, you know, after the whole, the Patek of the world, the AP of the world, and what's next? So I think the independent world actually going to provide that avenue of a whole new experience that you didn't know that you can have. That's a good thing about it.
So, but you skipped the kind of, would you say you skipped the Patek AP part of the journey?
I do have them, but I don't necessarily collect them, if I put it that way. I mean, you know, again, the historical important a product like the Royal Oak I have, you know, those things I like, because it has a very distinctive design. It's not the main focus.
So would you say some people get to that point and then get kind of stuck, if you like, on the journey, rather than, because it sounds, because I know people, the same thing, it's like that's their the pinnacle, and then they get there, and that's the kind of end of things. That's as kind of, for them, maybe spending that kind of money is as wild and adventurous as they're prepared to get, and they there's just not that extra little nudge or whatever catalyst it was that you had, where you think, okay, now I'm going to do this other thing and go down, like, it comes to a fork in the road, and they're kind of just stuck there, kind of waiting, haven't decided which way to go, and you're kind of plowing ahead and following these kind of the path that's kind of true to you.
I guess the way to answer that is, everybody's gonna, again, I think there's so many different variables that goes into that, right? But I think everybody's gonna come to a certain point within, you know, thresholds that they are in, of asking themselves, you know, where do I want to go from here? You know, it doesn't matter. Then the beauty of it right now is that even independence right now also provide that experience in many different levels, right? It's not necessarily the super high end, but you know, the brands that Rob mentioned, you know, it's actually very reasonable. You start at a, you know, couple thousand dollars, you know, starting point, but it gives you a different whole new experience, new ballgame, right? That you can actually enjoy.
That's the thing that's kind of opened my eyes in terms of micros, and I haven't purchased any yet, but you still get that personalized treatment to a certain extent that you can get with the, okay, they're not going to be spending 7 or 8 years like fine tuning
of course,
but you can still get those little tweaks, and maybe the different bezel and maybe a slightly different colored dial that you can't get with the big brands. So do you have you got any micro brands? Have you ever got into that kind of thing, just as on a kind of a side thing? Because it sounds like you're into every part of the watch world.
I try to experience with Lundus Blue.
Yeah.
And then what's the guy's name again? Forget about the, hey Rob, what's the name of the Lane watches?
Lane.
That's another Lane watches. There's another guy who's actually, I think he's doing exciting stuff. you know, not to,
you know,
he can do a few customizations, you know.
Yeah.
Then there's another guy, out of Germany, is doing a lot of customization for what, €5,000?
Really?
I forgot the name. There's
plenty of German brands as well, and they keep popping up as well every Basel, basically, every year. But I guess that's it as well. It's not just, I mean, yeah, the micro brands is a good example of brands which are not as expensive or more accessible, maybe. But I mean, everyone, apart from just their taste, then there's also an investment. There's also people that are not exposed to these brands. Charles and I, to a degree, have been lucky. You're exposed to those brands, and once you go to a Buzzerworld or two, if you're in the right crowd, you can go to Buzzerworld and not even see these guys. You know, if you're interested in the whole one big brand. But then there's guys like us who are the opposite. We don't even. So it's, but it's, you know, some people like different things. That's what's cool about the whole hobby or this passion, is that everyone's got different opinions and different tastes. So, you know, that's what you can get together and chat about, basically. But and then it's totally different collecting high-end independents to the military vintage. So, you know, you're talking to a whole different bunch of people, and you'll have people at both ends of that spectrum who aren't interested at all in the other segment, basically, you know. So it's kind of, it's interesting.
Charles, is there any part of, or any segment or kind of category of the watch world that you tried to get into? Because it just sounds like you're just so into all of it. There's nothing you haven't dabbled in. Was there anything that there was a buzz around, or anything that you thought, oh, I should try that out, and then it just didn't do it for you, or you couldn't understand what people saw?
I tell you this. Until now, vintage Rolex collecting is a puzzle to me. Seriously, you know.
Have you tried? I mean, maybe you're not trying hard enough.
Yes, I have. I have, you know, I have a couple of vintage Rolex, right? If you talk about the intrinsic value of, you know, again, this is my personal opinion. I mean, don't get me wrong, right? I think everybody gets their own opinion. Again, like Rob said, right? But the intrinsic value of it doesn't even equal to, you know, to the price that they put up, right? And then one thing, for example, if you're talking about the Paul Newman Daytona, right? You want to say it's rare, right? In every other auction, you're gonna have a Paul Newman Daytona, and then if you ask every single big houses, auction house that can you verify it's 100% legit? No one, and I mean no one, will give you 100% guarantee that it's 100% legit, right?
Mm.
And I remember one time, you know, my friend, I asked my friend who's a big Daytona collector, I said, hey, can I borrow one of yours, right? Yeah, sure, you can try it on. It was a $300,000 watch, right? So we exchanged a watch for a few days, and then, and he called me up, and he's like, hey, I forgot to tell you, right? If you wear my watch, don't shake it too hard. It's like, why? Because the loom can fall off. What do you mean? Yeah, the loom can fall off. And it's going to cost me a few thousand bucks to actually replace the loom. Oh my God. I said, you know, it's like that I don't get, really. You know, for me, watches, is who you are. It should represent who you are as a person, your personality. The fact that if you collect watches, you can't even wear it the way you wear it, that's a problem, right?
I think when you're talking about the value of it, that's the thing that I struggle with, is kind of putting those two things together, is the quality of the watch. And when you're talking about rarity as well, it can be rare, but within the mass produced market, it's like it's a rare watch, but still in that bubble of it's a mass produced thing, but it's rare in that section. And the value that people have assigned to these things, it's like it's I think it's tied to the same as modern Rolex as well. They started to treat it like it wasn't a mass produced item, and like it was something that was hand finished and stuff. And because a lot of the time when you speak to people, or when I speak to people about watches a lot, not necessarily even watch people, but lots of people on the street think that Rolexes, modern Rolexes, are all handmade. And they think that It takes like 2 years to make a Rolex and stuff like that. And it's almost like Rolex, the company, have started to capitalize on that public group madness, if you like, to make more money and to lift up the brand. And that's seeped into vintage. But at the end of the day, it's just mass produced. It's the value of it isn't actually, you can't see the value of it. It's only there because people tell you it's worth that amount of money. Whereas when you get into independent stuff and you look at it and it blows your mind, and you look at it from every single different angle, and every time you look at it, you see something new and you can't work out how they managed to do it. And you can see that somebody spent 2 years or 3 years.
That's exactly the point, Alex. I mean, I think vintage Rolex, to a certain extent, this is my point of view exclusively, is like playing a Russian roulette with your collection, right? You just don't know what you have.
Exactly. Yeah.
You really don't know, right? For me personally, I think I wouldn't risk my money into it, because I think the constant is going to be the economics of it, right? The supply versus demand, right? Mm. So I think independent watches, when it's still handmade, there's always going to be a finite supply to it.
When you're talking about your vintage stuff and military chronographs and stuff like that, it is a lot more, I think, reasonable when you look at the pricing of things. I mean, sometimes I look at vintage military stuff and the history's there, and even sometimes there's paperwork that goes along with it. I mean, as much as you can trust these kind of things, but it's just a much more exciting prospect with these kind of watches. And you are talking about a lot of the time not incredibly well finished hand wind chronograph movements, but still some really quite exciting things. And you get some vintage Longines chronographs, and they're really quite beautiful to look at. And then you look at it compared to vintage Rolex stuff, it's like 10 or 20x from Rolex for something that's a lot lower down the scale when you come to actual the watchmaking part of it. I was going to say, what we normally do is we do a Instagram recommendation to give people who listen someone to go and follow. So do you want to recommend somebody for our listeners to go and follow who you think they'll enjoy looking at their collection? Or a lot of the time the people I tell people to follow are just nice people that I enjoy chatting to. So it can be anything, anyone at all.
Horrorgasm, I think. I think if you want to talk about insanity about watch collection, you follow him. That's the next level of collecting. I mean, the guy owns about, gotta be close to 3,000 watch.
It's nuts.
It's just insane. So that would be the first in my mind to follow.
That's a good one. Rob, what about you? Who's next on your little list? Because you said Charles last time. Did you say Charles last time?
I did say Charles at one point.
Charles,
yes.
Did you realize you were Rob's recommendation last time? I'm sure you noticed the two extra followers that you got.
Followers, probably. Yeah. I was going to recommend another Charles called Charles Turl. He's a vintage watch expert, a guy that used to work for some big auction houses. Charles, I don't know if you know him, Charles. Yeah. Charles Turl. Yeah, you know Charles.
No.
Great guy though. He's I don't know where he is now. He's been in America. He's been working for some big auction houses. He knows his vintage stuff. Great photos. Because he had good insight into the vintage watch world as well. Charles Turl. Right. That's how T-E-A-R-L-E. So it's just Charles Turl. One word.
Okay.
Good guy. Go and follow him. What about Alex?
My one is another watchmaker from Melbourne. He used to work for Rolex. Michael Woods and he is Woods Watchmaking on Instagram, and he's actually been messaging me a bit recently telling me he's been listening to our episode drop and I was talking about screwdrivers and stuff like that, this is while he's working on stuff, so I can imagine.
Interesting. Okay,
yeah, he must just be overdosing on watch content, listening to us talk about screwdrivers and stuff, and actually
thanks for
working
listening
on stuff. But yeah, I've spoken to him only at one event before, but a really nice, friendly guy. And he's gone independent now, so he kind of darts in and out of Melbourne and picks up and delivers watches and stuff. But yeah, he's my
pick. Nice. Okay. Well, good. Thanks for coming along. That was brilliant. Gives us lots to chew over and gives it. Thank you. It gives the listeners a lot to
I found it honestly really educational to get that kind of insight. I just had no idea in terms of kind of turnaround times and the length of the romance or the courting, I guess you could say, of both parties. You kind of courting the watch brand and
that's
them kind of. Yeah, well, I think it's kind of it's
getting carried away, Alex.
It's a love story.
I'm crying in a minute. Oh my goodness sake! Okay, thanks, right, Charles. Thanks for coming on. That's brilliant. We'll see you again. I don't know when. Probably, I guess next year now, or whenever the next next show's on.
Hopefully sooner than later, no?
Yeah, exactly. And we're not far away now. You know, you're not far away from Perth. You need to come to Perth. I know you did. There's a trip planned down here not long ago, but it got cancelled. Remember?
Yeah, it was supposed to be the Metallica concert.
Yeah,
I know.
Anyway, yeah, sucks. Next time, not far away.
All right. Well, anyway, I think Alex, Melbourne is my wife's second home, so I might see you sooner.
We might catch up in real rather than virtually.
Yeah,
Rob's not invited, but yeah, that sounds great. It's been a real pleasure, Charles.
And then, likewise, pleasure to know you. Hope to see you soon in person.
All right, awesome. Super guy. Thank you.
Thanks for listening, guys. Go give Rob some love and or abuse. He's all over the place. You can find him on Instagram, Geneva_blue_. Go and check out his multi-award winning YouTube series, it says here. He's on anglagefetish.com, but most importantly, he's on genevablue.com.au. You can find all his stuff on there. Come and give us a follow on Instagram and Facebook, just Fifth Wrist. Most importantly, come and review all of your watches. We want them all on fifthwrist.com. If you enjoyed listening to Rob and I, subscribe to Fifth Wrist Radio Podcast. Stay on time, guys.